Chapter 72. Instauration. Instauration. I-N-S-T-A-U-R-A-T-I-O-N. Renewal. Restoration. Renovation. Repair. An act of instituting something. Establishment. From Latin, instauration. From instaurare, renew. From in, toward, plus staur, a stem also found in restaurare, restore. I think Kuramani is in trouble, Gaara whispers. Naruto blinks, pulling his gaze away from where Fu and Yugito are arguing in low voices, to look at his friend instead. Gaara's expression is torn, and there's an inattention in his eyes that means Shukaku is talking to him. Shukaku thinks so? He asks, quietly enough to keep either of the girls from noticing. Karin doesn't either. She's next to the girl with her hair up in buns, on the other side of the training hall, their heads bent together. A boy with a long braid of black hair is bouncing with nervous energy next to them, trying to interject, and that's distracting Karin enough that she doesn't even look their way. Curling his fingers through Naruto's, Gaara nods solemnly. He didn't want to tell me, but he keeps talking to the others and I can kind of hear it. Naruto bites his lip, because not wanting to tell probably means it's something really bad. Like, why the Hokage never wanted to tell him? What made all the civilians angry with him? And if Kurama, who's strong and smart and brave and good, is the one in trouble, that has to make it really big trouble. Especially with how worried Fu and Yugito look. Do you think he's gonna be okay? Sasuke asks quietly, looking from Gaara to Naruto and back again. Kuramani's really tough, Naruto says, more cheerfully than he feels. He'll definitely be okay. Besides, he promised he'd always come back, so he has to. He isn't going to think about how many people break their promises, or have in the past. Kurama isn't like that. He wouldn't do that. Your big brother? A quiet voice asks, and Naruto turns quickly to find Sakura a few steps behind him. She looks worried, the way she has since Fu burst into their classroom and told them to hurry up and get to the practice hall. But she still offers them a slightly shy smile when they all look at her. Kuramani's the best, Naruto agrees. And that's enough to make him decide, because he and Gaara have saved Kurama before, and if they stay here, they won't know if they need to. He jumps to his feet, tugging on Gaara's hand, and says, "We have to find him, Gaara." "Shh," Sasuke warns, but he's standing too, following Gaara up without hesitation, even as he casts a look at Fu and Yugito. "We're not supposed to leave." "Fune and Yugitone are in front of the doors," Gaara adds logically, though he is more stating a fact than arguing. Naruto gives Sasuke a stubborn look. "Kuramani's in trouble," he repeats. "Me and Gaara can help him." When Gaara nods in solemn agreement, he grins triumphantly. "You can stay here, but we need to find Kuramani." With a roll of his eyes, Sasuke grabs Naruto's other hand. "I'm not staying behind," he says, almost a challenge, and flushes faintly when Naruto beams at him. "How do you know he's in trouble?" Sakura asks, taking a step closer to their huddle. She looks over at where the teachers are talking in low, concerned voices, then back, and hesitates before adding, "The teachers didn't say anything. I would have seen." Gaara goes tense, like he always does when other people talk about the Bijou. And Naruto stops what he was about to say, meeting his eyes. For a moment, Gaara seems to shrink in on himself, like he's about to curl into a ball. But he takes a breath, then nods, just once. Taking that as permission, Naruto turns back to Sakura with a smile. "Because we've got big creatures living insides of us," he says proudly, ignoring Sasuke's muttered, "inside." "Gaara and me have one, and Fune and Yugitone, and Utakata and Roshi and Han. Even Yagura has one. They can talk to each other, too. Gaara can hear Shukaku, because he's really strong." Gaara flushes, ducking his head down again. But this time it's not unhappy, so Naruto doesn't mind. He just smiles at Sakura, even though he halfway expects her to flinch back the way civilians do. Thankfully, Sakura doesn't. She pauses to consider, but nothing else, simply nodding and taking the declaration at face value. "Does your brother have one too?"
"Kuramani is my uncle,"
Naruto says, in the name of accuracy. With a glance at him, Gaara looks up enough to meet Sakura's gaze.
"Roshi and Han are with Kuramani, but they stopped talking to Shukaku," he says quietly, and tugs on Naruto's hand. "We should go."
Which just leaves them the problem of getting out. Yugito and Fu haven't moved, and that's the only door. There's no way to get to the high windows without being noticed, and... "We're not going to be able to sneak out," is Sasuke's verdict. "There's a door to the outside in the basement," Sakura says, like she's surprised they don't know. "The teachers put all the extra practice weapons down there." When they all stare at her, she flushes.
"I helped Iruka-sensei carry some shuriken down the other day."
"You're the best, Sakura-chan,"
Naruto cheers. Quietly, though. Gaara just looked their way before her two new friends reclaimed her attention.
"Can you show us?"
"Should you really sneak out?" she asks worriedly. "Moto-sensei said we should stay in here until the Hokage says we can leave." "Kuramani is more important," Gaara says, just beating Naruto to the words.
His voice is firm and steady, without a hint of waver, and his right hand is tight around Naruto's.
"He saved us. We can save him, too, if we all work together."
"Just like when we beat the geezer," Naruto agrees. "And this time we have Sasuke, too."
"And me."
When Naruto blinks at her, startled, Sakura curls her hands into the hem of her blue shirt, but doesn't look away.
You need me to show you the way, don't you? And if someone catches me sneaking back in, they'll know you're gone. And I want to help."
The last part is much quieter, almost tentative, and Sakura's expression says she's braced for them to yell at her, to taunt her. Naruto has heard what the other children say about her sometimes, the way they mock her forehead and her shyness. Less now that Ino is her friend, but it hurts because it's so familiar.
"It'll be dangerous," he warns. "Because if Kurama is in trouble, it's something that even he can't handle, and that's not a good sign."
Sakura doesn't waver.
"Ino's really good with kunai, and she's been teaching me. If it was my brother or my mom, I'd want to help them. So let me help right now."
It's Sasuke who makes a quiet sound of approval, nodding.
"Me too," he says,
and offers Sakura his free hand. Sakura beams at all three of them and takes his hand in her own. He wakes to bone-deep cold and darkness, made darker still by the fabric pressing down across his eyes. "Blindfold," he thinks, with a surge of panic that's deeply ingrained, and jerks forward. But the bonds he expects aren't there. With a cry, he goes spilling off what feels like a hard platform, tangled in more cloth,
and even shinobi reflexes don't give him time to land in any sort of dignified way. He crashes to the cold floor in a heap and groans quietly at the impact, but doesn't waste time as he claws his way free of the white sheet, loose and delicate, that comes away easily in his hands. Yaiko blinks at it, then down at himself. He remembers Ame and Hanzo and betrayal in the rain. The last thing he can call to mind is Nagato's face, full of horror, and the tears on his cheeks. The way Konan screamed as the pain in his chest swallowed everything. It's a stark, disconcerting contrast to this darkened room that smells sterile and is both empty and silent. He expects to see his bloody Akatsuki robe, but instead there's a white kimono, perfectly neat and unmarred. A kimono that's been folded right over left because Yaiko was dead. He knows it without hesitation or doubt. That's true. He died, killed himself on Nagato's kunai to save his two best friends. And it was a stupid move, a desperate move. But there were strange shinobi ringing the valley and Hanzo in front of them, and Yaiko hadn't been able to think. So he'd given in, done what Hanzo wanted, and broken Nagato and Konan's hearts in the process. But Hanzo hadn't realized, hadn't known. Yaiko might have been Akatsuki's leader, but Nagato was its hope. Konan was its drive. Take him out of the picture, and the two of them would forge ahead twice as fast without him. Too fast. Always, always too fast. Too reckless, the pair of them. Set to give Yaiko white hairs before he hit 30, without a doubt. Gods, but even if it feels like it's only been a handful of minutes since he died, he's missed them. Of course, that doesn't mean whatever they did to bring him back wasn't monumentally stupid, because Yaiko has no doubts that it absolutely was. Fighting his way free of the sheet that was apparently covering his formerly dead body and, wow, hello, creepy. Yaiko pushes himself upright, feeling his head spin faintly, and catches himself on the edge of the metal table he was lying on before. He's not a censor or anything close to it, but there's a shiver of anxiety running down his spine, a flicker of adrenaline and urgency pushing him on, like something crucial he used to know and has mostly forgotten. He needs to go, to move, to find Nagato and Konan no matter where they are, because there's no one else who could be responsible for this. It has to have been the Rinnegan, one of those powers even Jiraiya knew nothing about, and could only say would change the world. Resurrection of the dead? Yeah, Yaiko thinks they can safely call that world-changing. The one high window in the wall lets in enough light for him to find the door, and it opens easily. No need to lock in a corpse, after all. Outside is, well, Konoha, Yaiko guesses, from the stories Jiraiya used to tell them. Not that he's ever been to the village before, but the stylized leaf on the hitayate of the shinobi gaping at him is all too familiar. Hi? Yaiko tries. The violet-haired girl closes her mouth, narrows her eyes, and demands, "Who the hell are you?" At the same instant, there's a deafening explosion of chakra, a wave of force that shakes the village and nearly knocks Yaiko from his feet. Blue, white, and cold, with all the power of a tsunami, it curls around them in an eddying tide and then retreats to more manageable levels. Yaiko catches himself on a tree growing out of the side of the closest building and turns to look for the source. A surge of paper whirls up above the tops of the buildings, then crashes down. Oh, gods. Sorry, Yaiko blurts, and takes a running leap before he even thinks to wonder if he can still use chakra. It sparks, though, catches easily, and he bounces from a balcony railing up to the roof, and then across to the next building. There's no time to stop, No room to think why Konan and Nagato would be attacking Konoha. No time to grab a weapon in case he needs to defend them. Only action and reaction. The surge of adrenaline that carries him across two streets and through a tightly spaced jungle of trees and vines. And really, who has a jungle on top of their house? Konoha is ridiculous. And then out into the open air. Shit, is his first thought, when he lays eyes on the fight. A split second taken to wonder if he's miscalculated and Konan and Nagato aren't the ones attacking, because there's a bijou in the street. He's never seen one in person before. But there's nothing else it can be. How many giant three-tailed turtles with ridiculous amounts of chakra does the average person come across? But then the image of it flickers and fades out, and an ash-blonde child is left behind, whirling a hook-ended staff around in a sweep of water to block a burst of paper bombs. Jiraiya is a few paces away, bristling with spiny armor as he knocks away one of Konan's clones. And there's a woman with hair even redder than Nagato's that's harrying what's probably the actual Konan. One more look around is enough to spot Nagato, slumped over against the side of the building. Ghostly pale in a way that means he's still recovering from whatever ridiculous thing he just did. With his legs sprawled out awkwardly in front of him. And an identical image of the red-haired woman is closing in. There's no need to think. Even if Nagato and Konan are attacking Konoha, they're Yaiko's best friends, and he'd do anything to save them. He doesn't pause, just throws himself down into the street and brings his hands up into a familiar sign, a burst of water exploding from his mouth like a dragon. There's a loud yelp, and then a sheet of stone leaps up to shield her, but Yaiko doesn't wait. He lunges forward, calling up more water to shape into a pair of clones, and they split, lunging around opposite sides of the barrier. Yaiko himself goes over the top, twists around a golden chain that stabs through both clones and lands heavily, one arm coming up to block the woman's kick. What the hell? The woman hisses, violet eyes bright with fury as she brings her sword around. I sealed you, you know. Sorry? Yaiko offers, then ducks her chains, goes low, and tries to sweep her legs out from under her. Instead, she kicks him in the face, flips over his shoulder, and slams a whip-fast lash of water into his back, throwing him face-first into her doton wall. Yaiko! Konan shouts over the sound of his groan. And in a whirl of origami weapons, Konan drops into the fight, another clone splitting off and lunging for the other kunoichi. The redhead spits a curse and dodges, but the clone drives her back, blocking each attempted hit with a sweep of paper weapons. Konan? Yaiko manages, still faintly dazed. He blinks up at her as she pulls him up, and wonders if it's the concussion that makes it look like layers of paper are splitting off from her skin. Did you turn yourself into paper? For a moment, Konan doesn't look like she knows whether to laugh or cry. In the end, she does neither, but hauls him back to his feet and drags him around the edge of the rock wall, heading for Nagato at a run. He's struggling to get up, but his legs keep folding under him like he's lost all the muscle in them, and he's painfully, horrifyingly thin. Yaiko! Nagato cries as soon as he catches sight of them. And there's no surprise in his face, just relief and bottomless joy. He reaches out and... Ame, betrayal, knowing that his choice was going to destroy his friends, but hoping that if he could at least buy them time, they could get out of the ambush alive and whole and keep living. Yaiko hooks an arm around Konan's waist and drags her with him as he drops to his knees, reaching out with his free arm to catch Nagato by the elbow. A light tug has Nagato spilling forward, colliding with his chest, and Yaiko wraps his arms around both of his friends and hugs them with all of his strength. You're alive, he breathes, and it shakes with wonder. Konan laughs, rough and almost wild, and she's clinging to him so tightly it's hard to fill his lungs. We could say the same. Nagato doesn't speak, but he buries his face in Yaiko's chest, hands white-knuckled where they grip his kimono, and his shoulders are trembling like he's fighting off sobs. Yaiko curves his hand around the back of Nagato's skull, holding him gently, and kisses the top of Konan's head.
"What are you even doing here?"
he asks, bewildered. "Why are you fighting Jiraiya-sensei?" Nagato tenses in his hold, sudden and almost violent, while Konan stills. They don't look at each other, but they don't need to. Yaiko knows guilt on them when he sees it, and something in his chest feels like it's sinking down into his stomach.
"Konan?" he asks.
"Nagato?" There's another flood of overwhelming ocean-vast chakra, filling the street with blue-white light, and then the heavy clack of familiar geta across stone.
"Nagato," Jiraiya says, tone flat in a way that sends a shiver down Yaiko's spine. "Stop this. Let him go. Haven't you dragged that body around enough already? Ruined Yaiko's memory, making him do your dirty work?"
"What?"
In his grip, Nagato makes a small, desperate sound, and chakra sparks, the preparation for something vast. But he's still pale with exhaustion, and before he can start the jutsu, Yaiko drags his fingers through his hair, one soothing pass, and loosens his hold. He pushes to his feet. Both Nagato and Konan let him go. Don't try to stop him as he turns to face their old teacher. He can hear them moving behind him, Konan pulling Nagato to his feet and holding him up, but he doesn't glance back, just meets Jiraiya's dark eyes squarely.
"Jiraiya-sensei," he says, doesn't try to make it lighthearted the way he normally would.
"You got old."
Shock flashes across Jiraiya's face, closely followed by disbelief.
"Yaiko?" he demands, flicking a glance back towards Nagato. "You're how?"
Yaiko just shrugs because beyond the Rinnegan, probably, he doesn't have all that much of an idea. It's not really important anyway. He's here. He's alive. All that's left is to move forward.
"Why are you attacking us?" he counters. "Weren't we your students?"
With a contained snarl, the red-headed woman makes like she's going to launch herself at him, only to have Jiraiya stop her with a tight hand on her shoulder.
"Attacking you? They're the ones who invaded the village, you know. Akatsuki are the ones who are trying to take over the world."
It feels like someone wrenched the ground Yaiko is standing on sideways, like the world has abruptly been upended around him.
"What?"
he asks numbly, and turns to look at his friends. Konan is blank-faced, even though her eyes are burning, and Nagato won't look at him, mouth tight with something that's either regret or anger. It's strange, unnerving. Yaiko's never had a hard time reading either of them before.
"What?"
he repeats, waiting for the denial, the explanation that doesn't come. At last, Nagato looks up, and his Rinnegan eyes catch Yaiko's and hold them without wavering.
"We were following our dream," he says, "like Jiraiya-sensei told us. Sometimes pain and personal suffering is the only way to protect people. If we can control the world, there will be no war."
"Nagato!" Yaiko protests, cutting him off sharply. "We thought that when we were children, Akatsuki was supposed to bring peace."
"We are." He's never seen Konan look so cold, so emotionless. It's almost eerie. "Peace through negotiation only brought betrayal. We couldn't..." She breaks off, and just for a moment, there's an overwhelming, aching loss in her eyes before she shuts it away and buries it again.
"We couldn't lose anyone else."
Nagato manages for her, lifting his chin as if he's daring Yaiko to protest.
"Madara?" Yaiko's blood chills.
"Madara? I told you! He couldn't be trusted! He was going to use us! Please, please tell me you didn't go along with him!"
"You were dead, Yaiko!"
Konan snaps, shifting like she wants to put herself between him and Nagato. You killed yourself, and we had to watch. And when everything was broken, Madara gave us a path to our dream. The dream all three of us shared. Your way got you killed, so we tried another way.
Yaiko's stomach turns, guilt and grief and horror in equal parts. They'd used to joke about taking over the world, ruling all the nations and using that power to keep the peace, but those were just jokes. They were kids.
Nagato, Jiraiya says firmly, give this up. There's no way out right now. Let us put the seal back on and we can sort all of this out later. You aren't going to win and you can't escape. It's time to face the other villages and answer for what you've done.
Nagato closes his eyes, takes a careful breath.
Answer for what I've done? He asks quietly. What about what they did? What about Konoha and Iwa, Suna and Kumo? They destroyed Ame and never gave us a second thought. Their wars ruined our country, our village, our families. They never answered for their crimes, Sensei. Why should we, when the scale is so much smaller in the end?
Yaiko swallows against the memory of their childhoods, their country. Ame was still a shattered land when he died, and he wonders how much of that has changed. Not much, likely. Even if Akatsuki survived, in whatever form, a handful of years wouldn't be nearly enough to fix things.
Konan makes a sound of quiet agreement.
You should understand, she says. But instead of looking at Jiraiya, her gaze is on the red-headed Kunoichi, whose eyes narrow warily at the words. You're an Uzumaki, aren't you? What happened to Uzushio? Kiri never answered for that, did they? There was no one to hold them accountable. Even Konoha's only thought was how they could use you, one of the last survivors. Your village was destroyed and no one cared.
The woman's mouth tightens into an unhappy slash. Eyes shuddering, though she doesn't look away.
Konoha and Uzushio were allies, she says, and they honored that. They couldn't get to Whirlpool Country in time, you know. I've made my peace with it.
You shouldn't have had to, Yaiko says before he can stop himself.
And this is the reason for Akatsuki. Because Ame and Kusa and Tani and all the other small countries that aren't considered great nations, they've never been given a say in anything. There's no way to band together. No power that can make them equal to Kumo, Kiri, Suna, Iwa, and Konoha. Akatsuki was the push to give them that. The hope that a small country could make its voice heard for the first time. The belief that one boy with Rinnegan eyes and a small group of dreamers could change the world. He can see the hope that rises in Konan's eyes. The way Nagato looks up at him and... Maybe Konan and Nagato have forgotten the details, but Yaiko will remind them. He'll drag both of them back onto the right path and out of this madness.
Gods, Yaiko loves them both so much. Even hearing this, even seeing them here in the middle of a battle like this, would never change that. Whatever they've done, he won't leave them at Konoha's mercy. Long experience has proved that the large villages don't have any to begin with.
Out of Jiraiya's sight, he flicks his fingers in a familiar signal, and he can see the moment Konan catches it. Her grip on Nagato tightens, amber eyes narrowing faintly as she subtly gathers her chakra, and Yaiko turns to fully face Jiraiya and the Uzumaki Kunoichi, shifting to put himself between the Konoha Shinobi and his friends without looking as if he's trying to.
None of this has ever been fair, he tells Jiraiya. You have to see that. Just because our countries are smaller doesn't mean we deserve to be fodder in other nations' wars. Nagato and Konan were wrong in what they were doing, but the facts have never changed.
Jiraiya looks old and tired and a little angry.
Yaiko, nothing in life is fair. He starts, as if he doesn't realize that's the perfect way to spark every last bit of the fury that's been driving Yaiko since he was a child. When did their teacher turn into such a fool? With a growl, Yaiko flashes through hand seals that he would know half dead, alters them with the flicker of chakra and the addition of the ram seal on the end, and focuses. Four pillars of water surge up from the ground, encircling Jiraiya and the kunoichi and closing in a rush. In the same moment, Yaiko leaps back, feels familiar arms wrap around him, and then, with a whirl of paper and the heavy beat of wings, Konan's clone is lifting him, carrying him up in a dizzying burst. The real Konan is on his left, rising in tandem with her arms locked around Nagato's thin chest, and beneath them, the green and brown of Konoha is falling swiftly away. Yaiko closes his eyes against the rush of the wind. "Let's go home," he says, almost too soft to hear, but he can feel Konan's grip on him tighten faintly in response, the way she tips her wings towards the northern horizon. "Let's go home, and then we can fix things," he doesn't say, but he's absolutely certain that they understand anyway. There's a lot of work to be done, and it's about time they get started. "This is just about the worst idea Kakashi's ever had." "You're sure this will work?" Momichi demands, watching the way Kurama and Son are wrestling with wary eyes. "Not a clue," Kakashi doesn't say, though he wants to very badly. Before he can come up with a better answer, though, Fuji huffs. She flips a leaf onto her head, and with a puff of smoke, a girl appears, white-haired and dressed in red, with three tails peeking out from under her kimono. "Thumbs," she says triumphantly, and snatches the orb with one of Kurama's Bijudama trapped inside, unclipping the beaded chain and pulling it off. "Stop being a stick in the mud, Momiji. I don't see you coming up with any better ideas." "You want an idea how to deal with Kyubi-sama?" Momiji huffs. "I have one. The best one. We could run." Fuji ignores him, leaping up with the orb in one hand and scrambling back to Kakashi's side, practically throwing herself under his arm as he tries to split his focus between the Kitsune girl and the barrier. "Here, dog man, I think this is the seal that's keeping it stable." Kakashi doesn't flinch back, even as the chakra equivalent of several hundred explosive tags is waved under his nose. "We're going to need to get close," he says, and, "Wow, this is such a bad idea." And Kakashi feels that if he's the one saying that, it should mean something. Momiji groans loudly, but starts to grow again. And in an instant, he's twice the size of a horse, planting his paws on the stone and shaking out his frost-tipped fur. Foxfire flickers around him in an aurora of icy colors, and his mismatched green eyes open. "I'll guard you," he offers. "Don't let my sister get eaten, all right?" That's easy enough to agree to, since Kakashi doesn't plan on letting anyone get hurt. He pauses, watching the fight, and feels small hands curl around his elbow as Fuji follows his gaze, amber eyes wide. "It will work, won't it?" she whispers, glancing up at Kakashi's face. Kakashi crinkles his eyes at her, trying for a smile he doesn't feel. "Ma, it's just like breaking a regular genjutsu with a ram seal. Cause a fluctuation in the chakra, and it disrupts the entire system enough for the genjutsu to shatter."
"It'll be the same, even with the Sharingan?"
"Hopefully. But Kakashi doesn't say that, either. This is a long shot, and if it doesn't work, well, Kakashi just really, really hopes it does."
"Raido," he calls over the crash as Son and Kokuo both go tumbling back. "Get Genma and Aoba out of the way." "What?" Raido demands, but he's already too late. Kakashi steps out of the barrier formation, feels it shatter even as Momiji goes surging past him with lightning crackling over his fur, like Fuji did the first time she came to Kurama's rescue. He skids to a halt, plants his feet, and spits a lightning bolt straight at Kurama's face. Kurama snarls, high and sharp and furious, and lunges with his teeth bared, but Momiji leaps out of the way,
just barely jerking his tails to safety before massive jaws snap shut. Before Kurama can try again, Kakashi steps in, flickering through hand signs and sending earth surging up Kurama's legs to drag him down to the stone floor, throwing his weight to one side. Kurama manages to wrench one foot free, but before he can pull the others loose, Momiji lands on his face with all four paws, snarling and swiping at his eyes. There's a scream of pain, and Kurama tosses his head wildly, flinging Momiji off, only for the smaller fox to catch himself in midair with a burst of foxfire. At the same moment, Kakashi goes low, Fuji practically running on his heels, and calls up a twist of water that drives at Kurama's head. It knocks him sideways, just a step, but he roars with fury, red and black eyes opening as he turns on Kakashi, mouth opening in a wide, angry howl. Fuji, Kakashi says, not quite able to tear his eyes away from the teeth that look as long as his whole body. Fuji, now would be very convenient, thank you. Almost, the vixen cries. 1 minute, I'm almost. Sand whirls up, hardening around them like a dome, and an instant later something massive, likely Kurama's face, slams into it, and there's another sound of rage. The sand sweeps away, but chains of golden chakra catch Kakashi's eye, tangled around Kurama's head and neck and dragging him back. Naruto, Kakashi thinks, and the sheer terror of Naruto being here, right now, with Gaara at the very least, is almost crippling. Gaara, run, he snaps, bolting past the six-year-old to throw up a Raiton barrier and block the sweep of Kurama's tails. There's a flash of blonde hair off to the side, and with it, a dark head and a pink head, and Kakashi curses, slides under a swipe of Kurama's free foot, and sends a pillar of stone slamming up into the underside of Kurama's jaw. He snarls, shaking it off, but the chains take advantage of one moment without him fighting to pull tight, dragging him down to his knees. The nine-tailed fox hits the ground hard, snarling in a way that rattles Kakashi's bones, and... Here! Fuji shoves the glass orb into his hands and disappears into a puff of smoke, leaping out as a fox almost as large as Momiji's current form. She lunges for the children, snatching Gaara up by the back of his shirt as he runs, and slides sideways to plant herself in front of them as foxfire flares. They vanish completely, even to Kakashi's nose. But there's no time to worry. He takes three steps, judges the distance, and shouts, Kurama, isn't it about time you went back to being short and grumpy? Massive teeth snap, and with a roar and a heave, Kurama surges to his feet, chains shattering as chips of stone go flying. He turns on Kakashi, lunging for him without pause, and Kakashi doesn't hesitate either. He flips the altered star ball over in his hand, feels the chakra within it shiver like the precursor to an earthquake, and hurls it straight into Kurama's mouth as the Kyuubi tries to grab him. There's a burst of violet-edged darkness, an explosion of chakra fit to blind, and then Kakashi knows nothing else.